Corinne van Seffert, Sanhedrin, Cathay, Amor Bet, 25. Excuse me, 25B2.
Okay.
25B2, halfway down the page. In the middle of the writer, which is telling us about how each of these people who are disqualified from being judge or witness, how they make teshuva. So, the next one in the list of this writer is Shviit merchants. We saw in the Mishnah that they were actually called two things. First of all, they were called Shviit merchants. Let's have a look in the Mishnah. No, first of all, they were called Shviit gatherers. And later on, when the oppressors increased, whatever that means, we're going to see later on, they were called Shviit merchants. So our writer is already talking about the Shviit merchants. It says, Eilu Shenosim, sorry, Sofei Shviit. Who are the Shviit merchants? Eilu Shenosim Venotnim. The Peirot Shviit. Those are the ones that do business with the fruit of, or the produce of Shviit. Okay, the person who does that is, again, in the category of someone who is puts monetary gain above Torah law. Torah says you're not allowed to do it, he does it anyway. So it's not theft. It's not theft. They're allowed to take the fruit, it's hefka. Right? So you're not stealing it. So there's no theft involved when you take it. You're not allowed to sell it. But selling it is a different prohibition. It's not to do with theft. It's just to do with the law that says you're not allowed to trade in Shviit. You're not allowed to sell it. So I'm breaking a law relating to selling it, but it's not theft. But because it's in the category of breaking Torah law for financial gain, and it's in the category of people who are going to be disqualified. Right? We're going to see in a minute those who are guilty of theft. It's the writer. So theft is a given. Theft there's no argument about. So all of these ones that we're now including as being disqualified, they've all done something which is close enough to theft that we disqualify them rabbinically from being that's telling us how a disqualified person repents. A disqualified person in a brighter that we started yesterday, listing the different types of person. The one who plays dice, he needs to crush his wooden tubes. The one who lends on interest, he needs to
tear up his documents
and not even lend on interest to a goy,
which he's allowed to do to a goy,
which he would be allowed to do. So he goes above and beyond to show that he is now clean. Pigeon flyers, They have to tear up their pigeons. No, they don't. They have to break up their clackers.
Yep. Not tear up the pigeons.
Top. So now we're on to Shvi'it merchants. Sofre Shvi'it. Elush Nasim not Nim and Peiwot Shvi'it. These are the ones who deal, trade in produce of Shvi'it. Right? So like we were just saying before Abraham came in, it's not theft. Because you're allowed to take, it's hefka. You're allowed to take the stuff. So when you take it, you haven't done anything wrong. But you're not allowed to sell it. Right? That's a prohibition on selling it. So when you sell it, you're now breaking Torah law for financial gain. So that's something that the rabbis disqualified you. You're not guilty of theft, but we're disqualifying you because you clearly put financial gain above the law. Right? That's more important to you than keeping by the law. So we can't have you as a judge or as a witness. Because you can't be trusted, you might put money above being honest. Okay. In my time, when
can sell for more?
Can sell.
You sell the fruit.
Yeah.
You cannot sell the fruit, you sell the work.
Sell the work. Yofi, so top. That's what they do nowadays.
Yeah.
But what's our Aretz? Right? What's our Aretz? They, is Kedushat Shvi'it. You'll need to get your bin ready. Your Shvi'it bin. You got a Shvi'it bin?
My wife's all set. They have these wonderful booklets on how to keep Shmiya in English at the garden shops.
The garden shops?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The nurseries.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Nice. Very nice. Top. Do you know that? Top. You can sell Shmiya bins, but you better be quick.
Yeah.
You can sell Shmiya bins.
I book.
Yeah. Although interest, just so you know, not to compete with you, that the Torah tidbits this week has in it, I think it's this week, was it last week? I don't know. Oh, I picked it up yesterday, so I assume it's this week. Has in it the list of all the fruits and when they start and when they. Nice little chart. So pick up your Torah tidbits this week.
It's probably this week as it comes out today.
I know, she picked it up yesterday. Anyway, so have a look at that. But if you buy Otzah Aretz, Tov, you have to put it, you have to put your. I don't know how we've gone to this, but you have to put your stuff in the bin. Right, what do? So they sell the. They don't sell the produce, they sell the work, they sell the transport. And getting it to you, right? Which you're allowed to do. So here, what are we doing? What are we seeing here? Here, a person who doesn't do that, a person who sells the produce, right?
It's like you go and buy etrog. What's the
code? You cannot
sell
the etrog.
You have to buy. You sell.
No, if it was
the ruler and the etrog together.
Yeah.
You buy the ruler.
But what about people who sell etrog separately? Huh? People who sell etrog separately.
There's a problem.
That's a problem.
You cannot. Because when they.
Well, you have to check the where, what if it. It could be heta mechira, could be yotze. No, but on any fruits or vegetables, how to prove?
Yeah,
you need a. I suppose you need a. Yeah, normally you have a tuda. But here in the shuk, when you go and buy your etrog. True, there's no two that. You're just trusting him that. Normally you wouldn't buy any fruit or veg without a two that. You don't know what it is. Certainly not in Shemitah. You don't know where you can't buy fruit and veg really on Shemitah unless you know where it came from.
So last year they had these stands across the street from Makaneyu, the show.
Yeah, every year they have a big show there.
Yeah, the
So this year, it's a bit more problematic. Probably there's that Hashem when we next have a Rav Elgod class. We should ask him. Probably but, before Sukkot, we're going to have one.
Maybe this before
I know, actually, but I don't think they have Kedushat Shvi'it anyway, because they're before, they're produce of before.
No, but we covered that in Rav Yishai's class. Before and after, it still is Kedushat.
No, but it depends when the harvest is. It's the harvest of the etrogs Which
before.
Will be, yeah, it was before Rosh Hashanah. Yeah, right? It's going to be, for sure.
But
they don't have any Kedusha.
No, but it does.
Why?
It has to deal with just the Esrog itself. This
the
year.
The ones next year, the ones in the following year, will have Kedusha Shabbat.
And this year, too.
And this year?
And this year.
You mean the same thing after Rosh Hashanah is Kedusha?
No, I think it goes on when the fruit is. I don't know when the fruit is harvested. I don't know. No, it's not the produce of that year. I think it goes in the. No, we need to have a class. Well, I need to have a class anyway. I understood it goes on the produce of that year. If it wasn't produced this year, the actual fruit produced.
No, but the Esrog is different.
Why? Because it's not got a year. It's all year round.
Yeah.
Right. It's not got its own harvest. Only things that have its own defined harvest period,
right.
You go by the period of that
right.
Fruit.
Why
an Esrog is all year round.
Why they say.
Right, now hold on. So for sure it was harvested in that year.
Yeah, yeah.
And
but
you don't know
when you buy now etrog after Rosh Hashanah.
You don't know when they picked it. The
same truth is by etrog
by. Right. The truth is probably most of them were harvested before Rosh Hashanah because no one's going to be working really in the Chagim, and everybody knows Dafka this year specifically. Everybody's going to be more careful. You can't rely on probability, but I'm just saying it's likely.
We podcast about all that.
Yeah. Huh?
It's all on podcast now.
Where is?
All the laws of Shemitah.
Where from?
Rav Isha.
Oh, Rav Isha's class. All right, what did he say about Eshok?
It has Kedush, you see.
Right, so you have to be careful where you write from.
Yeah.
And,
but normally, don't they? If they're in a box.
Yeah. So they don't grow in the box.
No, but you know they're picked and then they should have a good. But not.
You were told that the boxes are just printed in China, so I don't know. There's no because.
You can buy. You cannot sell it.
But wait a minute, if I bought it, have I done anything wrong? If I buy Shvi'ah,
it's
only selling it or is it a buying it? If I buy an etrog, I pay money for it. I haven't done anything wrong. The one who sells it. No, not to buy lula, just the etrog. The person who buys it. Is that an avera? Is it only the person who sells it? So now I don't have to worry. Because even if it has kedusha shvi'ah, I'm not doing anything with it. I'm taking it, and I'm not gonna. I'm allowed to buy kedusha shvi'ah.
But the other thing is with estrogs, aren't they imported from Egypt?
Some of them are, but a lot of them are grown here now. Not all of them. Palm as well. Palm, you don't know where the lulav itself. The lulav used to, a lot of them used to come from Egypt. No, most of them are from Egypt, no?
Yeah, but there's still fruit in Shabbat. You can't cut the lulav. There's nothing you can say.
It's not fruit. It's not fruit.
You have to cut it only in the unusing way. But they still buy lulav together with the etrog. You buy more money for the lulav.
And the etrog you get free.
Yeah, it's like
same.
When you sell it, you sell lulav and etrog together.
Or if I am buying. The more holy of the two, I say.
Okay, that ends the lesson on Shvi'ah. And back to the Gemara. Shalom Rabbi Elazar. We're in Kaf Hei Amud Aleph, a bit. Okay. Halfway down. We're learning about Sochrei Shvi'ah. It's very topical. I'm just seeing how little we know about Shvi'ah. Well, how little I know.
Shvi'ah.
That's why we're discussing the fact that I know nothing, or not enough anyway. I say nothing, but certainly not enough. Tov, you made the decision about what you like. People, some people like go with decide beforehand. am I going to go where I can? Otzer haaretz, I'm only eating kedushat shviit. Or davka, I'm not eating kedushat shviit because it's too dangerous. I'm only eating imported yotzei chul, right? Not free stuff. Or am I taking the middle road of chet mechira, or do I not rely on chet mechira? Because chet mechira, you could argue different hashkafa as well, not it's permitted or not. And where to shop? Where are you going to buy? Is there an Otzer Haaretz shop near you? And if there is, are you going to try and shop there?
Well, my wife's just going to shop at the shuk.
Yeah.
To stay at the local market.
Okay.
And she's really strong on that.
But to buy what?
Everything.
No, but for which version? You've got three options. You can either buy stuff from Goyim, which has no kedusha. Stuff from Chet Mechira, which has kedusha, but it's done by a Chet Mechira. Or stuff which is Otzer Haaretz, which is through the Beit Din, which is the best way, really, depending on your hashkafic point of view.
Well, she was using
most of Meisharim by Yovel Nochri.
Yeah, that's right.
Most of the used to be anywhere. I don't know what, like 7 years ago. I don't know about this year. People are getting more and more used to Otzer Haaretz. But it used to be that in the Frum world, that when it comes to Shemitah, don't touch any produce from Eretz Yisrael. We dafka to the opposite. We're trying to only buy Otzer Haaretz. But if you can, often if you want to get a nice sample,
she's going. They don't have. She's trying to find the best Heksher that she can.
They're going to go on Heksher. Goes on three different options. Do you want to buy stuff from Goyim and avoid the problem altogether?
No.
Exported stuff. Do you want to buy Kedushat Eretz Yisrael, which has holiness? But then you have two options. Otzer Beit Din. Or Chet Mechira. Or Chet Mechira.
Yeah, with all the radiation. And they've had a 5-year, 4-year drought now.
And you have to know which one it is, because one of them you can throw in the dustbin, and the other one you have to put in your special.
Well, she's already prepared a special.
Okay. So, anyway, so that's that. Let's move forward. So, when do these people repent? How do we know that they've done teshuvah after they've sold shviit produce? Misha tagia shviit acheret v'yibadlu. When the next shviit comes along, and they don't, they separate themselves, they cancel themselves, they don't do it anymore. The Rashi says here, more than that, they refrain. The Halakh tries to say the Rashi. You have to shalo yisau v'yitnu v'peirotayim. They don't trade in their produce. V'yafkiu gunotayim la'aniim, and they make their gardens hefka for poor people, right? They allow people in to take their own produce. So even though they don't need to do that, right, what happens on Shviit? The land, the produce is hefka. So really, there's a question about, can you walk into your neighbor's garden and he's got a very nice peach tree, whatever he's got there, and this is hefka, I'll have one of those. Why not? It's all hefka. So my understanding, and I'm not a posek, my understanding is that you're right, you could do that, except for the fact you're not allowed to trespass into his garden. So if he allows you into his garden, for sure, you can take the fruit. It's not his fruit. It doesn't belong to him. It's hefka. But he doesn't have to allow you in. So if they're overhanging the road, you can take it. I'm not possessing, I'm just my understanding of the law, right? But you're not allowed to his garden. So here, the people who were selling the produce are now allowing people into their gardens to take what they want, which they don't have to do, and therefore you can't just strip the land. If someone's got an orchard, you can't walk in with a big bag and take and strip the orchard and then, you know, that'll last me for the next 3 months, thank you very much. No, you can't do that. You can only take enough for three meals. A normal, whatever that means, amount for one person to reasonably take. Okay, so that's how we know they've got someone who's gone above and beyond what he needs to do in the area where he sinned. Ramah Rabbi Nachamia said, Lo chazarat devarim bilvad amru, ela chazarat mamon. Rabbi Nachemiah disagrees with that first opinion. Rabbi Nachemiah says the teshuva he needs to do is not devarim bilvad. It's not things themselves. Devarim here means words, like a promise. Ella, rather the return of money. I actually need to return money. How? Kate said, according to Rabbi Nachamia, how does he do this? Omer, what he says is, Ani ploni ba ploni, I am ploni, the son of ploni. Kinasti ma time zuz, peirot shviit. I amassed for myself, I took in 200 zuz from produce of shviit. And I'm giving this money as a gift to the poor. Right? If he knew where he right. Tov, he doesn't have to give back the money to the field that he took the produce from. So it's not about stealing. Right? The 200 zuz doesn't go back to the person because the money it didn't belong to him. It didn't belong to anyone. There's no one to give the money back to. But he did take money from people who bought from him. And that money he needs to give back. How does he do it? He gives it back to the poor generally. So by giving that money back to the poor, that, according to Rabbi Nachemiah, is his teshuva. Right? So if we're thinking about going to teshuva and anything that we've done wrong between man and man, things that we've taken that we shouldn't have taken, or whatever. If we can't remember exactly who we took the money from, you can give it to the community, you can give it to the poor, and affect Shuba and hope that the money gets back to where it needs to get to. So anyway, so that concludes the Braita. It was a long Braita, listing all of those different things and how each one makes teshuva. So that was the end of the Braita. Well, remember, why do we bring that Braita? We brought that Braita, originally, if you look back at the top of the page, we said Meitve, this was a challenge from the Braita. What was the challenge? So the challenge is now going to be spelled out in the Gemara. Ketane Mihat Behema. Ketane Mihat, the Braita taught in any event about a behema. Right, where did it teach about the behema? When we were racing pigeons. Right? So we said in our Braita that the pigeon racer or the pigeon flyer, Mafrichei Yonim. Elu she'mamrim et hayonim. These are the ones who incite the pigeons. V'lo yonim bilvan, not only pigeons, amru, they said, Ela afilu behema achaya ba'of, even a behema achaya ananof, right? The domestic animal, the wild animal, and the bird, and off. So now, based on that part of the Braita, the Gemara now brings its challenge against Rabbi Bar Chama. What did Rabbi Bar Chama said? Rabbi Chama Bar Oshaya said that. Let's see what he said. Got it already. Rabbi Chama Bar Chaya said it means the pigeon decoys. Right? One, the first interpretation was the pigeon racers. If your pigeon arrived before mine. The second opinion was Rabbi Chama Bar Ashaya. who said no one's dealing with decoys. The person who lures. Hi, Shalom.
Hello, how are you?
Good, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. I'm Yosef.
Yosef, hi, I'm Ruben.
What's your name?
Ruben.
Ruben, nice to meet you.
Ah, kind of new. There's the boss.
That's the boss. How are you?
Hi.
Nice to meet you. Yes.
So, okay, so those are the two opinions. So Rabbi Yoshaya, Rabbi Hami Bar Yoshaya said decoys. We want to challenge his opinions about that these pigeon flyers are really decoys. Why? Because the writer said that they include domestic animals. So the question of Rabbi Yoshaya, how can you say a pigeon decoyer? What do we say the decoy was? The decoy is a person who takes pigeons and causes other pigeons to fly into the nest because he ties their leg down and opens the gate and they flap up and down. And then some passing pigeon thinks, oh, that looks fun, and wants to come and join the party. So, but how can you say even domestic animals, because there's no domestic animals that you could do that with? You take one of Rabbi Yaakov's cats, try this at home, and tie its leg to the mirpeset, and then open your mirpeset. You're unlikely to get a flood of cats joining him. Right, it doesn't work. How can you take a domestic animal and lure other domestic animals to it? I don't know, maybe you should try and tell us if it works or not. So the
Gemara actually got an email about that.
Yeah. So the Gemara says,
lost her cat.
So that's the challenge of Rabbi Chami. Tom.
But he's talking about oxes now.
Well, that's his answer. We haven't got yet. So far, there's no such thing as a domestic animal that could be lured in that way. Therefore, so the Gemara says, Bishloma lamandamar e tikadame yonah leyon. It makes sense for the one who's saying we're talking about pigeon racing. If your pigeon comes first. Right, then the brighter which says about a domestic animal is also included in this group. Makes sense? You can race domestic animals. You can race Kitchi against the local neighborhood tomcat and see who comes home first. And for sure your cat knows where it's, which side its bread is buttered. And it probably both sides in your case. Right? And it's going to come home very quick.
More relevant would be horses.
Horses, racing horses, racing dogs, right, racing lots of things. Yofi. So that makes sense. Bishloma. However, hainu demashkachat lebehema. Hainu, in that case of the racer, demashkachat la. We do find behema, domesticated animals. Ella lamanta ma'ara, but according to one who says we're talking about a decoy, which is Rabbi Yoshaya, right? Behema bat hachichi. Behema bat hachichi. A behema bat hachichi, is he also able to do this? Is he also capable of bat hachi? Like a bar mitzvah, you're the owner of, you're the capable of. Can you do this with a behema? The Gemara said, yes, you can. Ayn. You can. Bashur habar, with a wild ox. Apparently you can tie up a wild ox and thereby lure other oxes. I have no clue why that's the case, or why that's the particular one that was chosen.
Now, are those other wild oxes, or are those others, people's domesticated oxes? Because if they are, then they'd be considered theft, wouldn't it?
It's a good question. Well, it depends. So they do belong to other people. Apparently they do belong to other people, but it's not real theft because he hasn't taken anything. They've come, inverted commas, of their own accord. So he didn't steal anything. You're right. I now have in my possession something that belongs to someone else. But there was no theft involved in how it got to me. Right, the theft is taking stuff, right? If you, the idea being, if you have in your possession something that doesn't belong to you, it doesn't necessarily mean you stole it.
But then it goes back to the original idea of disturbing the peace.
So that would be the other reason. So that would be the other reason why it was banned, because it's not theft. Here it says in the footnote a rabbinic form of theft. So
that's why I used theft.
Right, but it's not derived to theft. It's not a strict case of theft. But the rabbis called it theft and gave it the label of theft and said this is not allowed. Right, so this is a wild ox. So this wild ox is the example of a behemoth. Even though it's called a wild ox, it's not a wild animal. According to one view anyway. Ubamanda amar shohaba min behemahu. So according to the view that says the wild ox is a type of behemoth. There's two views. One is that a wild ox is actually a wild animal. What's the difference between a wild animal and a domesticated animal?
Does it belong to anyone?
Nope. If you have a stray cat, does it become a wild animal or stays as a domesticated animal? Answer is a domesticated, a cow. Cow's a domesticated animal. If you have a cow that's wandering around ownerless, it doesn't become a wild animal. It's a domesticated animal that doesn't have an owner.
What's a wild ox? It's an ox that
doesn't have an owner? No, a wild ox is a type, a species of ox called the wild ox. There's an argument whether or not it's classified as a behemoth or a chaya.
Cats too.
Why?
Cats have no
homes. Why do you have your cats are wild anyway. but it doesn't mean that they're classified, halachically speaking, as wild animals.
Classified.
Kilo Nirshan. Nirshan. Nirshan the...
When the people are written, like,
with
the ID.
Yeah, like in Beit Shemayim, when the Shemayim is classifying this animal, is this animal considered to be a chaya, or is it considered to be a behemoth? How do I know? Is there any different one? What's the difference?
Well, in a more general sense, are we considered domesticated or are we considered wild?
Tough.
That's for the individual to determine.
That's you decide then you've got it at top. So the difference between a chaya and a behemoth, halakhically speaking, has a practical impact in what bits you can eat. Right? There are chayot that are kosher, and there are behemoths that are kosher. Right? A chayot like a deer. Deer is kosher?
Yeah.
So it's a chaya. It's a wild animal. Right? It's not a behemoth. It's not a domesticated animal. Right? But there are different bits. You can't eat the chelev of a behemoth. The chelev, which are certain fats of a behemoth, are forbidden. But the same fats in the same place on a chaya, you're allowed to eat. So why? You have to ask the chelev, the fats on a behemoth, you're not allowed to eat, they're forbidden. But on a chaya, the same chelev, you are allowed to eat.
For example, a bison is normally considered a wild animal.
A bison?
It's a form of ox.
I can't tell you what a bison is. Like
bison.
An ox. Maybe a buffalo. Kilo, something like that. Maybe it's this wild ox.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on.
Whereas a domesticated ox.
Yeah.
It's a domesticated ox.
Cow.
Like a cow or a water buffalo.
That's domesticated?
Yeah, they use it in the Orient.
Okay.
For
okay, with the horns.
Plowing.
Yeah. Tov, okay. Anyway, also, the other difference is that when you kill, when you shecht a chaya, you have to cover the blood. with earth. So you don't have to do that with a behemoth.
I thought you did that with
you do with a fowl. Chicken. You do with a chicken too. You do with fowl too. But with a behemoth, like in the slaughterhouse, they don't sit there covering all the blood up. I know, I've never been there, but when they shed the cow, like the blood just drains out and it goes down the whatever. They have a drainage system. Like, but you don't have to cover it up. But with chayot, you do have to cover up the blood with earth. Huh? Cover up. Put on earth on top of the blood.
After.
Right, but only with a chayot, not with a behemoth. Oh, big hashkafic things going on there.
Did we go to Rush yet?
Not all of them. Sorry, us? And the Shemot, but why it should be different between a Chai and a Behemah looks as like, especially if you've got one water buffalo and one cow, and you can't really tell much of a difference between them from the outside. Tov, anyway, so according to the one who says that the wild ox is actually a domesticated animal, then that's the type of animal you can decoy, you can lure. You can tie one up, and the others will come and join him. Try it with your local wild ox, see if it works. Okay, so it's according to the view that says that that's a behemah. Ditznan, like we learned in the Mishnah, Shur Habar, Mina Behemahu, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Mina Chaya. A wild ox, says the Mishnah, is a behemah, but that's Tanakama. Rabbi Yossi disagrees and says no, it's from a chaya. So we see if there's a dispute on a wild ox. And according to the Tanakama, that it is a behemah. So that gives us a case where we can find that even a behemah can be used as a decoy. And therefore, our Braita, which listed also behemah, chaya, and off in the pigeon racing category, can even refer to pigeon decoys. Yo. Do a little bit more. Tana was taught in a brighter. Hosifu alehem, they added to these. This list that we just mentioned are all lists of people who are disqualified from being judges and witnesses. So they added to this list. Hosifu alehem. Hagazlanin v'chachamasin. Right? The gazlan and the chamas. Right? Chamas are also forbidden from being judges, which would disqualify most of the Supreme Court. There we go. Rabbi Yaakov, I said that for you. Right? And freedom fighters. What do you want to do? They're
freedom fighters.
They're fighting for freedom.
It was kibush and there are freedom fighters.
And they're just misunderstood. Four things are misunderstood. Miscanians. So anyway, so the people who are what's a gazlan and what's a hamas? So gezel and hamas are two types of robbery. What's the difference? So gezel is where you take something without paying for it. You steal, you rob it. You gezel is, oh, this looks nice. Thanks very much. Right, see you later. Right, you run up. Yeah, I'm not paying for it. I'm taking it. Right, through force, through violence, through threat, through power, through
but
whatever.
But there's also burglary where you're simply stealing it where no one's there.
Okay, so that's different. That's geneva. Geneva is theft when you're not looking and I whip it. And that wasn't me. Right? But robbery is where I walk in with a gun or with my big muscles or whatever I've got that means that I can take it. I say, I'm having that and I take it. Right? That's gezel. That's robbery. What Hamas is also robbery. But the difference with Hamas is they pay for it. And you pay for it. Right? I'm sure there's deep, you could probably do a whole post on this. But, right? They pay for it. They pay Am Yisrael for their electricity bill occasionally. But they get their money from the UN first. But actually, no, we pay them and then they just give the money back. Anyway, Tov, but whatever happens, they pay for it. So what does it mean? What does it mean? It means that it's not robbery then, but it is. Because I don't want to sell it. Right? You just bought a new car. You just bought yourself a new Rolex. And I come along and say, oh, that looks good. I'll have that, thank you very much. And you are, I'm not selling it. It's mine. And yeah, I don't care. I'm taking it. And I take it from you, and I give you that, and I leave the money. It's worth 100 shekels. Fine, give it me. I don't want to give it to you. I'm taking it anyway. You take it, you put the money down there, because I don't want to feel bad. Pay for it. So, that's called Hamas. Mm-hmm. What it means?
Is this like so? You don't sell something?
Put the furniture.
No, I think you have the
chicken. No, make it so bad again. You sell 100 chicken.
Could also be that I don't want to sell it at that price, and you make me sell it at that price.
If really
it's worth 200 and I only give you 100, then I am stealing. I'm stealing 100, and it's the first one. It's Geza. Because you're not paying for it. You're paying a little bit of money for it.
Let's say you have price. When people come, make you price down.
Yeah. Depends if you agree. If you agree, you agree.
You lose it in your heart, you want, let's say, around 500 shekels. So on the end,
it's a good question.
You sell for 300. But in the end, you're not technical.
So it depends. So you would have a good hashkafic question about what we learned before about that. At the time of the sale, am I committed to the sale? Am I agreeing to it or not? Or is it just last matter? Right? I don't really want to be doing this. Fine, take it. But it's then it's a last matter. There's no kinyan that. There's no... Or are you saying, at the time, fine, take it, fine. Agree 100%, take it. And then when he's gone, I'm like, oh, I can't believe what I did. Afterwards, I'm now regretting it. But at the time of the sale, I did have kinyan that. I wasn't happy, it wasn't ideal, but fine, take it. Okay, give me the money, fine, go. We're done. We've got a deal. And then later I'm like, I can't believe what I just did. But then it doesn't undo the sale, because the sale at the time was good. So here, I know, you could probably argue different versions about what exactly is going on in the case of this robbery. For sure there's no kinyan that. There's no kinyan, there's no desire to give it.
Many times, like so, you ask how much cost 500. In the end, you see them 700 checks. Say, why 700? I had the tax.
Right.
Yeah, understand?
Yeah.
Many taxes. When I make a profit, everything I say improves everything.
Right. Okay.
Sometimes, in my mind, this is the price with the tax. Right. Sometimes it's like that.
I was once standing at the Pelophone store in the bus station. If you ever go to the central bus station, the top of the escalator, there's a Pelophone stand. And if there's a kid there who's about 20 years old, don't go anywhere near him. He could sell ice to Eskimos. Right? There was a guy in front of me. I needed to get a sim for my daughter. And there was a guy in front of me who was buying something. He ended up buying. He bought a phone. He bought a tablet. He bought the case for the tablet. He bought the protector for the case. And he was like going crazy. The guy was telling him, like, buy this one because it comes free with this. You may as well. It's an extra 100 shekel and it's worth like 500. And then just get the protector. You're going to need it. And the insurance on the thing, because it's going to, trust me. He was just like, at the end, you could see that he was going, he didn't know how to get out of it, and he was just like, right, so that could be at some point. the case of and someone came to buy from him and offered him 200. And he was saying, Shema, so he didn't answer. So the guy said to him, okay, 300. He still didn't answer. He said, you know what? Fine, 400. And he finished Shema. He said, fine, we can sell it. So he gave him 400 and then he gave him 200 back. He said, no, I agreed on the 200. But I just, right? You, but you don't have to. Right? But it's a midah that you, whatever you were going to.